Welcome back to Mike and Maurice's Mind Escape. Let us help you escape your mind.
Folks, welcome back to Mike and Maurice's Mind Escape. We have episode number 178 today. We're going to be talking about Initiated and the Gimbal UFO video with Matthew Roberts. Matthew was stationed on the USS Roosevelt during the Gimbal events, and also he wrote the book Initiated, which you can find on Amazon. I have the link down below. Go check it out if you love, you know, UFO, paranormal, Jungian archetypes, all that kind of stuff. It's actually a really good book. And it kind of puts you in the middle of things. So I really enjoyed it myself. So go check that out. And if you have not already, head on over to our Patreon and go to patreon.com/mindescapepodcast. For $2 a month, you will get exclusive guest episodes and content. We have different tiers. It goes all the way up to 50, but you know, $5 will get you access to fan chats on Discord, and 10 will get you into our secret episodes. So we're going to be releasing one of those soon as well. And if from there, you want to head over to indrasweb.org. Indrasweb is the social media platform that we created to have these kind of discussions and dialogues on UFOs, ancient civilizations, you know, hypotheses and theories that you don't really see too many people talking about. We want to connect visionary type thinkers. So head on over there and set up a profile. And yeah, without further ado, welcome on the show, Matt.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely.
For sure. It's a pleasure having you on. You know, we've talked to a couple people before. We've had Sean Cahill on, who was on the USS Princeton for the Tic Tac. And we've had Lee Adams on, who's actually the person that connected us together. So shout out to Lee, but Lee had his own sightings, I believe, and when he was stationed in Virginia. But why don't you kind of give us a little bit of the background on your military experience, and then we'll kind of work our way into your book.
Okay, so I spent about 16 years in the Navy active duty. And in 2015, I was stationed on board the USS Theodore Roosevelt as a cryptologist. And so I was present for that event. And after that, I transferred and did a tour at the Office of Naval Intelligence in Washington, D.C. I left the Navy in March of 2020 and released my book in November.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And the thing that struck me is kind of, you went through this like kind of a spiritual awakening, but it wasn't all good. You know, there was a lot of, you know, there was like a dark side to it, almost like some shadow type stuff. So do you think that that's connected to, you know, your experience with the whole Gimbal events and seeing that and then, you know, getting out of the military? Do you think that that was kind of connected, or do you think that that's just something that was completely separate, that maybe you were going through your own stuff?
Yeah, so I think that I think all of that is a part of the same thing, right? And I think that that's one of the reasons why I wanted to write this book, because I think that there are a lot of people that get confused as to what's happening to them. You know, you might be experiencing bad paranormal things in your house and think that your house is haunted, or something like that, but it's all a part of this awakening process. And it's guided, I think, entirely by them. And it's based on your own psychology and your own views of the world. And so, I mean, they know exactly what it is in your mind that you have to get rid of, right? And usually fear is the last thing to go. And so they're going to make you confront that. And that's what all of this kind of bad activity is about this type of experience. You know, there's the whole, people might describe it as like the dark night of the soul or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's basically it's a process. And it's kind of a grooming or a shaping of the mind in this process. And so, you've got to get rid of things like fear. And so one of the best ways to do that is to just, you know, scare the bejesus out of somebody until they can't handle it anymore. And then at that point you kind of just let go of that fear, because you obviously can't live your life 24/7 in fear. Mm. You know, it forces you to give it up.
So when you were kind of in the mix, you know, and when you were on board the USS Roosevelt, did you see the video then, or was it that something that you saw after, or was it just people talking about it, or what was going on there?
It first came to my attention because people were talking about it. And then I decided to go and look at the footage for myself. And so I did that back in 2015. I had access to that kind of thing. So I took a look at it, and that was the first time I saw it, was in 2015. And then my experiences really picked up when I saw the footage again after it had been released to the public. Because then it kind of really brought it home and said, you know, this is very real. And when I was on the Theodore Roosevelt and watching this footage, I had this just crazy, weird, emotional response to it.
Hmm.
And at the time, I didn't really understand that. But I kind of do now, because I realize that, you know, this has been going on my whole life. I didn't consciously realize that or put those things together until much later.
Right. And you actually discuss that in your book, and actually you talk about your brother's reaction to the 2017 New York Times article, and he's calling you, you know, talking about this gimbal video, and you're like, oh shit, you know, I know what's going on here. What did that feel like to have some sort of like, connection to it like that? Like, that's something that you would figure that would probably, you know, based on previous, you know, dealings with the, you know, the government and UFOs and stuff, that's something that usually wouldn't get out. So did that make you, you wrote about how it made you nervous a little bit, but did it make you nervous because it got out, or did it make you nervous because you felt like, obviously, this is something crazy and now a lot of people know about it?
Well, I guess it was all of the above. You know, when my brother first alerted me to the New York Times article and the footage, you know, he was really excited about it, and texting me, hey, you know, check this out. And I said, okay, I'll check it out later. And so I watched the footage, and I kind of, it was a little, I guess I kind of panicked a little bit, because I didn't understand, number one, why was this released? Was it released legitimately? And I wasn't sure, you know. And so that was a little scary for me. And then number two, my brother was asking me about it, and my job was something that, you know, happened entirely behind closed doors and was not something I ever discussed with people, you know? And so then here's this footage that I saw, you know, behind closed doors, and now he's asking me about it, and I don't know what I'm going to tell him. You know, I don't know what I'm going to say.
Well, you probably don't know. You probably didn't know what you could say, right? Because you knew more than normal people. But what was the vibe like on the ship, when, like, were people thinking like, oh, this could be some sort of, you know, advanced military technology? Were people saying this is probably from a different place? You know, like, you know, we've had Dr. Gregory Little on, talking about how, you know, there's technology like these plasma, I don't even know what you like, holograms.
Which may or may not be conscious.
Yeah, like, and he thinks that plasma could be conscious on some level, but he was saying that there's these holograms and that maybe we were, you know, testing our own people or something like that, like seeing how they would react. Like, when you think about it like that, do you think that could be something from us still, or do you think that for sure this is off world?
For me, I mean, at the time I didn't know, you know, obviously, but since I had these follow-on experiences afterwards, I can, for myself, I definitely know that this is probably off-world, you know. Just because, you know, the entities I saw later in my room and at night, they were very much not human. So, I mean, that's just the logical conclusion for me.
So let's talk about that. So you discuss being kind of violated by a blue female entity. You also talk about these dark shadow entities. You even discuss how your mom had some weird experiences with dark shadowy people in her house. And later you found out that why would that be the case kind of a thing. But these experiences, how do you know that this isn't some sort of, like, how did you distinguish that from, like, sleep paralysis, obviously? Because our buddy Lee Adams on, and he talks pretty openly about his sleep paralysis, and you can have very real encounters with beings or things, and his were dark as well. So how do you know that, I guess what I'm saying is, how do we know that sleep paralysis isn't some sort of mechanism to connect to this weird phenomenon?
Well, I would agree with that. I think that that's exactly what it is. I think science describes sleep paralysis as some kind of malfunction of the brain. And I think obviously that's not what it is at all. I mean, if you can go on Reddit, there's a sleep paralysis sub. Mm-hmm. And even despite the fact that people see the same things over and over again, you know, there are still people in there that say, oh, well, this is just some malfunction of the brain, even though every other post is like the Hat Man, shadow people, the old hag. Like, it's just the same thing all the time. And I don't understand how people just aren't putting that together. I mean, it seems a little ridiculous to me that, you know, everybody would see these same things, and yet... here we are debating about what it is, you know.
A stereotypical thing that you saw on the post, or was yours a little different?
So I mean, the blue lady is definitely a reoccurring thing. Yeah, and people see blue beings sometimes. More often than not, though, it's just they'll talk about them as shadow people or demons. And I've talked to other people that that I know personally that have been in and had these types of experiences, and then they have follow-on experiences. And I mean, it's hard to deny when I'm talking to somebody, and then they tell me about the beings that they see, and they describe them, and they're the exact same ones I saw, you know. And so, what is that? You know, science can't explain that to us yet, I think. And I think that they really need to start looking at that. They need to start looking at, well, is this really some malfunction of the brain or not? And I don't think it is.
I've had a couple sleep paralysis things where I was up late and didn't really get much sleep a couple times. One of the times I was actually using psychedelics and didn't get much sleep after, and then it's like this flood of like light, and it's almost like somebody pulling you back into, I was on the couch the one time and in my bed another, but it was pulling you back, and you see these visions and you literally can't move. For me, I didn't see entities though. I saw one thing I saw was almost like a planet with like a smaller planet behind it. It was really weird, and I just was forced to stare at this thing. And then the other one I had, it was just a flood of like white light. I didn't see anything else. So, but I sympathize with people that have these like traumatic experiences. Did you think that maybe you were going like crazy or were in some sort of psychosis?
You know, and you know, that's another aspect of this. I think psychosis is not what people think it is either, because often people who are experiencing psychosis, they see they have sleep paralysis, they have depression,
mm-hmm.
They have anxiety, they have all of the things that kind of line up with this transformation process that I talk about in the book.
Right.
And so I think I didn't think I was going crazy. I knew that there was something more substantial here. Because, well, for instance, like the first being that I saw in my room during sleep paralysis, was a blue female. At first, all I could see was just a shadow figure. You know, I saw a torso, a head, and two arms kind of standing over me. And I woke up because she was grabbing my arm. And she was bent over me looking into my face. I couldn't see anything but obviously the outline and the dark shadow. But as I'm looking at this, like the room starts to light up behind her in this golden light. And then the light becomes so intense, and then it started to organize into rays of golden light coming out of her head. And I thought to myself, like later on after the experience, I thought to myself, you know, this looks like religious art from all over the world.
Right.
So this has been going on a long time is what immediately occurred to me.
And it's important to note too, that you were a self-proclaimed atheist and didn't really believe in metaphysical stuff prior. Is your grandfather worked at NASA and your father was an astronomer, is that correct?
Yes.
Did that kind of catapult you into a whole new obviously it's a paradigm shift, but did it open up the doors of thinking like, oh, if this is possible, a lot more things are possible?
Not immediately. You know, my immediate reaction to that was that I felt very kind of violated, you know, and I felt that this was wrong, whatever it was. You know, because at the time I started to slip into this deep depression. I was absolutely terrified at night. I started to sleep with my lights on because I just could not stand the dark. I could not stand it.
Yeah, you talk about that. You were very emotional too and had a lot of breakdowns and stuff. So I mentioned before, you had kind of this spiritual awakening. You started reading the Kabbalion. You even looked up the author, right? It was at Atkinson. I forget the guy's name.
William Walker Atkinson. So I came across this book, because I had been looking, I'd read Tom DeLonge's books, right? Because this was kind of a source for me because he was listed in the New York Times article. So I wanted to, you know, kind of follow credible sources. And at the end of one of his books, he talks about these tablets, these ancient tablets, and he kind of leaves it as a cliffhanger there. And I was like, well, I don't want to wait for the cliffhanger. I don't want to wait for this next book. Let me just look up. Maybe I can figure out what these ancient tablets were. And I came across the Emerald Tablets, which led me to like Hermetic teachings, mm-hmm. Which led me to the Kabbalion. And I read the synopsis of the book online and I was like, well, you know, I just don't believe in any of that. This doesn't interest me. And I wasn't going to read it, you know?
Yeah.
I had actually made my mind up that I wasn't going to read it. And, that's when things just got much worse, you know?
Right. And the Emerald Tablets are Hermetic texts, obviously. It's where we get as above, so below. There's some people that go crazy with it, and there's the Emerald Tablets of Thoth out there, and then there's like Hermes Trismegistus and that whole thing. I think that obviously we know the Hermetic text is real. Now, I think people, again, embellish the other stuff with the Thoth and everything like that. And I love ancient Egypt and all that stuff. But when you look into what's going on now, how do you feel about kind of TTSA splitting up? You have Lou Elizondo and, Steve Justice and Chris Mellon leaving and kind of doing their own things. What do you think about that? Do you think it's like a good thing to kind of get the word out and spread it out more, or where do you see this kind of going, I guess?
I really don't know, because I don't have contact with any of those people. I don't know them, but I mean, from what I see, I don't think there's anything to worry about. I mean, people, you know, when they left TTSA, people started to go nuts online and, and just throw fits. And I think that, I think everybody just needs to take a deep breath, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that obviously there's been more excitement around this whole thing, right, in the last few years, not just because of the article, but because of this media push. And you have like UFO Twitter, shout out to UFO Twitter, and you have all these other, you know, there's Facebook groups and all these different things where people talk about this stuff, and it's kind of really exploded over the last few years. And you have a lot of people that weren't interested that are now interested. And I think that what we need now is more, right? We need not necessarily another gimbal video, but we need some evolution of this process. You said you're not in contact with any of these people. Do you feel like, when you went through this, it seemed like you were kind of on your own, but do you feel like maybe if you had other people that experience this stuff to bounce it off of, to, you know, bounce these ideas off of, that you maybe wouldn't have been in that position? Or do you not regret it, and you think that it kind of led you down your own kind of a path?
I hate that, you know, people look at something like this and they think, oh, those people, they're crazy. You know, there's no beings in people's rooms at night and stuff like that. And there's no such thing as this spiritual awakening, but this is a natural part of the universe in which we live. And that's just something that I have realized. And I think that these beings that possess this incredible technology know that, right? They know this other aspect of the universe. And I think they're trying to introduce us to it. And I don't think that there's, you know, anything crazy about that, honestly. And it bothers me that there isn't more acceptance of this. And I can't tell you how many people I come across that have read my book that then message me and they say, I went through the exact same thing and I've never talked to anyone about it because they just don't want the stigma, you know?
Do you think if there was an overall if more people did accept it overall that didn't have the experience, then more experiences would actually happen?
Oh yeah, I definitely think that, because I think part of this is like, how willing are you to accept what's being placed in front of you? You know, yeah. And I think that is a big part of the process. And so the whole time I was going through it, there were a lot of things that I just wanted to deny until I couldn't deny it anymore, you know, because the evidence in my own mind just started piling up. And then I was like, okay, I mean, that's not what I want it to be. That's not what I thought it was, but that's what it is, you know? Mm. and I think that more people just need to keep an open mind. You know, there was a time when everybody believed the world was flat. You know, and I think that 100, 200 years from now, people are going to look back on us and say, wow, you know, they didn't know about telepathy and all this other stuff. They were really dumb, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we talk about that all the time, you know, Thomas Kuhn and paradigm shifts and scientific revolutions, and what's known now 100, 200, 300 years from now is going to be replaced, built upon, changed, you know, so... it's very interesting that, you know, materialists and science, you know, people that are push scientism and all these things, it's interesting that, I don't know if any of these people actually study the philosophy of science, because if they did, how could they be so sure of what they're doing now? Because what they consider empirical, it's not really that empirical. So,
right.
Yeah. It's an,
yeah.
It's
One thing that people always bring up is that, you know, that stale old Carl Sagan quote that extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
Right.
And I hate that quote. I hate it because it has nothing to do with science.
Right.
You know, scientists will hold that quote up and just use it to continue practicing what they believe, which is religion. That's not science. Mm. You know, I mean, you've got to look at the evidence, and evidence says that, you know, there is something there. And I talk about that in my book too. And I give people sources for looking at kind of these scientific studies of consciousness that are starting to happen now.
Absolutely.
And by legitimate scientists, you know, these aren't quacks. One of them, you know, is a Nobel laureate in physics. How can you deny that?
Right.
You know?
Well, I mean, even when you look at your story and your experience and stuff, it's, you know, some people are going to look at it and be like, oh, you know, this guy was on the USS Roosevelt and he was part of the Gimbel incident and, you know, he probably knows more and that's awesome and everything. And then you have the other people who will say, oh, well, he knows more. And, you know, it's this weird dichotomy where it's like you have more credibility because of the military thing, but then people question that too. Like, oh, what else do they, you know kind of a thing. And I guess my question is, everybody thinks there's somebody at the top who knows something, right? Like something more or something grandiose that we just can't even fathom. Do you, from your experiences, and obviously you don't have to go into detail about anything, but do you think there is somebody that knows a lot more than what we know in these different, you know, departments? Or do you think that we're all kind of in the same boat? We know that there's this thing, this phenomenon, but we don't know exactly what it is, or what's going on?
Well, so that's kind of a difficult question to answer because, so a lot of times what happens with that kind of thing is that there's an organization, let's say, will come to some kind of consensus about something, right? So, So, you know, you might have people who believe it or who don't, but the organization as a whole decides, okay, well, this is kind of what we think and this is what our best guess is. And so this is kind of what we're going to roll with until we know something else. But I don't think that there is a consensus because I mean, just like in the general public, there's no consensus as to what this is. You know, there's people that believe that it's evil. There are people that don't think it exists at all. And then there are people who kind of view it as like this spiritual thing.
Right.
And so I mean, I don't know. So, I mean, on my Facebook the other day, I found a document on the Black Vault, which was it's an NSA document about the Gateway process, right? Mm-hmm. And that document, I mean, people talk about, oh, we're still waiting for disclosure and they're sitting on the end of their seats. I don't know. I don't know what they're expecting. I don't know if they're waiting for a parade or what, but,
right.
But it's some of these documents that, have come out recently. I think, you know, it's all there. This NSA document I posted talks about, you know, what they think the universe is, and what consciousness is. And that is profound. The fact that they released that is profound. And the document is from 1982.
Right.
So it is old.
Right.
And if this was happening in 1982 behind closed doors, I think it's pretty safe to say it's still ongoing, you know? I mean,
right.
That's
well,
just
I mean,
my thought on
I actually initially, out of all the videos, I thought the Gimbel one to me was the most interesting, one of all three of those, the Go Fast, the Tic Tac, and the Gimbel. Not that I think the Tic Tac is interesting because you have David Fravor and you have the pilots and then you have the radar and then you have other people, you know, that's Sean Cahill, all these people that experienced other weird things going on there. So that one's interesting, but I thought the Gimbel, as far as just video goes, was the most interesting. Do you think that those videos have been altered or doctored. And it's because some people are like, why isn't it crisper? I mean, I don't know enough about the FLIR or the forward looking infrared systems to say one way or another, but do you think those have been altered in some way?
No.
Mm-mm. Okay. And what about what about extended videos? There's also been talk of videos being cut off, or maybe there's more to videos than were shown, that kind of a thing.
You know, I'm not sure. I don't know. I mean, the clips that have been released and the length that they're at are exactly what I saw. Could there be longer versions of it? I don't know. I mean, I don't. I just have no idea.
Interesting.
I mean, the pilots kind of had some things to say about that. On Unidentified, I'm not sure if you guys caught that. They had two of the pilots on, and I recognized them from the ship. So I know that they're legit. I mean, they wouldn't have put them on if they weren't.
Right.
So you don't think the government's sitting on this mass of information that they're just trying to dissect before releasing it?
I don't know. I almost don't even feel like it's useful to speculate.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've heard Lou Elizondo talk about how there's a lot more, you know, and so I wouldn't doubt that. Mm-hmm. But your
experiences are very real to you, so that's all that kind of matters.
Yeah. I feel like people get bogged down in, okay, we need more videos, we need more proof of this. But I mean, look at what we've got. We've got all these eyewitnesses that are credible. People who had clearances in the government, people like myself who just left. If I had stayed in for another 3 years, I would be collecting a pension for the rest of my life. $2,000 a month for the rest of my life, and I walked away from that.
We didn't even mention your embolism that kind of took you out of the game there. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
It didn't actually completely take me out of the game.
I
got sick. I had a massive saddle pulmonary embolism at the beginning of all of this. And so I was in the ICU in the hospital for a while. And you know, at the time I just really wasn't very worried about it. I never felt like my life was in danger. I was very much just kind of indifferent to it. But you know, my recovery was a long one. It took a while, to be able to catch my breath again. I was on oxygen for a while. And because of that, you know, I had to go through a medical review process because I couldn't be deployed again. I couldn't deploy at all anymore because I was on blood thinners now. So if I so much as got a cut on the battlefield, you know, that could be it. So they told me I was non-deployable because of that. But because I only had 3 years left, they said, okay, you know, you can stay in if you want until retirement. And so I decided I would do that. But then obviously everything else kind of happened. And I thought to myself, you know what? Other people need to know what I've been through. I'm not going to keep this a secret. I'm going to share it, you know. And I've heard some people online talk about how my book is just a cash grab, which
I had to search. I just want to point this out. I had to search real hard to even find an interview that you've done. So you're not out there promoting this book, gallivanting around. That's the complete opposite. There's very little information other than your book being on Amazon. So I don't see how that could even be the case.
Well, that's the thing. You want to be rich in these days. You got to write a book, right? That's the way to become a millionaire in today's society.
Yeah, everybody reads a book, right? It's better than TV. I mean, it's just ludicrous that anyone would imply that. I make almost nothing off this book. And like I said, I walked away from $2,000 a month for the rest of my life. Because I didn't think that it was worth, you know, because I knew what I went through is real, you know, and I knew other people were going through it. So I couldn't really justify to myself, you know, keeping that to myself for another 3 years just so I could collect a check for the rest of my life. It just, in my own mind, those two things didn't balance out. So I decided, okay, I'm gonna release the book and get it out.
Yeah, no, that's again, I mean, I'm glad you wrote the book. It's very interesting. And actually, I saw some hallmarks of things that I experienced going through a spiritual awakening too, 3 or 4 years ago, that were like, oh, I know what this is. And actually looking back now, and I don't know if you're there yet or where you are now, but I looked back as, you know, some of the connections I was making were pareidolia. I was just moving on from one thing to the next, connecting dots that weren't necessarily, there was anything there, except in the moment it feels like there's something there. But that being said, it's led me down this path to try and find what you're talking about is like this, what's going on in these anecdotal and personal experiences. And while initially I loved all like these videos and like the more physical material evidence, I now am looking towards the experience of things. I mean, we're big into expanding the mind and consciousness, meditation, psychedelic experiences, that kind of thing. These are things that we talk about all the time on this podcast. So I'm very, and I've experienced entities on psychedelics as well. So, do you feel like maybe that we're just not aware of this whole spectrum of stuff that's happening around us all the time, and that you were talking about like us evolving and being able to, you know, experience these things or understand them more? Do you think though that that's the whole point though, is that we'll never know exactly, and it's this thing that's like dangling this carrot trying to get us to evolve or progress in some specific way?
I don't think it's unknowable to us. I mean, science evolves, you know, it has been evolving and it's going to continue to evolve, and I think that it's going to eventually incorporate this stuff. Because as I said, it is just a natural part of the universe, and I don't think that it's beyond us knowing either. And that's part of the weird thing about it, is that you tell people that, you know, the universe is not unknowable to you, you know, and that's kind of a bold statement. And I think that people hear that just don't understand that at all. Like, how is that possible? You know, and part of it has to do with the way we live. You know, we're so wrapped up in the material. Everybody's looking for the new car, the nice house, you know, the diamond ring, you know, whatever. And no, you don't need any of those things. You know, when you're caught up in that, right? You're caught up in the material world, and people tell you what to think and what you need. And pretty soon you just forget to think for yourself, you know. And that's the big part about this transformation and knowing the universe for yourself. And you know, people can say what they want to. I don't want anyone to believe me, right? I don't necessarily care if you believe me, but I want people to do it is read my book and do these things for themselves. Because when they do it for themselves, they're gonna see if this is real, you know.
Right.
So don't believe me. You don't just take my word for it, but read my book and incorporate these things, and it will happen. You know. And that's kind of the message I'm going for.
Interesting. So as I mentioned before, your grandfather worked for NASA. And your father was an astronomer. Did they ever talk about anything weird that they've seen or believed in or anything like that?
You know, they didn't. And my father, I think, for a long time, didn't believe anything I was saying. I thought. Yeah, he asked me once, you know, are you on some kind of medication or something?
Right.
But no, I never heard them talk about anything, but I definitely see this going back in my family several generations. My grandfather that worked for NASA, his mother, my great-grandmother, was committed to an insane asylum.
Yeah, you wrote that. That was in the book, born. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was something that kind of always stood out in my mind, because, you know, when I was going through this, I thought, oh my gosh, you know, am I going to end up in an insane asylum? You know, is that how this is going to end for me?
Right.
Because I didn't know where it was going, you know. And so, you know, I you see this in your family, and you realize that it's been happening to your family for a long time. So there's kind of genetic component to this. There has to be. And, you know, we as humans and as scientists, we need to figure that out. You know, I mean, they kind of leave us breadcrumbs, and I think we should look into it and figure it out.
No, actually, I mean, you're right. And I've talked about this before too, but my spiritual awakening had to do with family stuff. And, my grandfather was a visionary inventor who was fascinated by ancient Egypt. And my great godfather, his son, you know, we went over his notes and his meditation techniques, and, you know, I saw some diagram stuff in there, and, it just kind of catapulted me into this idea that, this is something that's like passed down. It's like, you know, initiating your own family into the mysteries of life in a way. And I got that sense too from reading your books. Obviously, you talk about that. But I another vibe I got was almost like, I don't know. Have you seen the movie Hereditary?
No, I haven't.
You should check it out. It's like an occult movie. It's like a horror movie too. But I, you know, some of your stuff kind of had some dark vibes, right, with the whole psychosis stuff and all that. Not necessarily, like you said, it's like in a negative thing. It's just like a different lens to view things through. I don't think you're wrong about what you're saying with the whole, I mean, if epigenetics and genetic, you know, stuff being passed down is real, which we know scientifically, then I don't know how some of these like consciousness aspects or like archetype stuff wouldn't be passed down either.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, you see how like mental illness can travel through families. Alcoholism is something else, you know. And you know, I really kind of feel like that's a lot of that's behavioral.
Hmm.
I think that I don't know, for me, probably one of the most profound understandings of this, that I think that genetically, I feel like we can change ourselves a little bit. In doing so, we change our mentality and our view of the world. I think that actually genetically changes you in some small, minute way. And I think that's something we should look at too. And how behavior affects genetics, because I think it does.
Yeah,
I mean, I know it definitely affects the brain. And so, you know, one of the things that really gets me is that, you know, depression and anxiety and stuff like that is something that people believe is like a hereditary trait.
Mm.
But I think that you can break that. You can break that by training yourself, I think, you know, and then it becomes something that is receptive rather than something that is up front in your face, you know.
Mm.
It's also easy to blame your parents on the issues that you have rather than confronting them, trying to make a difference. It's easy to get into that mindset of, well, I have this, it's a hereditary
military personnel in particular are kind of ripe for this experience. Because being in the military, you have to think and behave a certain way, right? And it's kind of in keeping with stoicism, right? You don't have any comforts or pleasures out to sea. You know, you work every day at least 12 hours a day. Some days I would work 20 hours a day out to sea.
Wow.
And that wasn't uncommon, you know. And so that changed the way I thought about things, the way that I viewed the world. And I think that's why so many military personnel have these types of experiences. A lot of people like to think that, oh, they're attracted to, you know, the nuclear warheads or like nuclear engines in a ship. But I really think it's the people.
I would say to that point, though, why do you think then there's this big flux of sightings then after the detonation of all the, you know, atomic bombs and World War II and all that kind of stuff? Why do you think that initiated this thing? Because that's why some people point to the nuclear thing, is we discovered the atomic bomb and that kind of, you know, had some sort of effect on these entities.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that maybe it's possible that it could. But I also think it's just as possible that in having these weapons, obviously, that kind of changes your thoughts on things a little bit, you know? And knowing that these weapons exist, the fact that we use them in Japan, you know, I think that focuses your attention in a different way, right? Kind of like this pandemic is doing,
right?
It starts to get you to think, well, what really means something to me? You know, what is all this? What is substance? You know,
and
what's important to me? You know, these types of experiences get you thinking in that way, and that's the way that you need to think in order to come to this kind of awakening.
Where do you stand with all this stuff right now in terms of, like, do you meditate? Do you still have these, like, sleep episodes? Do you, you know, like, where are you currently at with all of this stuff going on?
Well, I still have very good dreams. Yeah, we haven't really talked about it, but I, you know, I can sometimes kind of hear this voice upon waking that will tell me something. I talk about is that it helped me write the book. I would wake up with the name of an author in my head, and then jot it down, and then I'd be able to Google them and see, oh, yeah, this guy wrote a book about exactly what I'm looking for, you know. And I mean, it's in that way too that it kind of proved itself to me, because how can you dream something and then in your waking life you can get up and Google it and it's right there? You know, it's like, how can that happen? And there are people that I've never heard of. I was never interested in psychological archetypes or Jungian psychology or psychology, period. I mean, I never in my life read a psychology book. I thought the whole thing was bogus.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. So when you look at, you know, what's going on now, you do have some of these groups out there trying, you know, like Sky Hub, you know, is this new one. They're going to try and create these instruments to kind of detect these things. Do you think that we can use visionary science or, you know, different techniques, even though this might be non-physical in some way? Do you think that there's some way to prove it or detect it that we're just not aware of right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think these things are physical. I mean, obviously, we would pick them up on radar. The pilots in these videos that have been released were able to lock onto that signature.
Right.
And you can't lock onto something that's not physically there. So I think have the instrumentation to be able to test these things physically. I think the next step would be, how do we detect them not physically?
Right. So do you do you think they're coming in and out of this physical realm? Like, do you think they're interdimensional, or do you think they're just nuts and bolts from a different part of the universe? Or both, I guess, would be another option.
Yeah, I think it's kind of all of the above. And again, for me, this is like one of those things that, you know, it's okay to speculate, but I wouldn't waste too much time on it because it's not the point.
Right.
I mean if that's once again, you're getting lost in like the physical aspect of it.
Right.
And you don't need to. You know, obviously, to me, in my own mind, obviously, I feel like this is a threat. You know, I mean, this has been going on for so long. If they wanted to do something, they would have done it by now. We don't have anything to worry about.
Well, there's competing narratives, you know, like that's what the TTSA was saying. It is a threat. You had Stephen Greer on the other end saying, no, it's not a threat at all. They want to help us. And then you have, you know, kind of everybody in between kind of, you know, shouting, their different opinions, but, I don't know. I think that there's something to, like I said before, I think that this thing is, and if you listen to like Jacques Vallée talk, and some of these like visionary thinkers on the topic, you get the sense that, you know, it's like, even look at the technology advancements within the last 200 years. Like there's this thing I believe is ushering us towards something. You know, maybe we're, you know, caterpillars that are headed towards some sort of cocoon and are going to emerge as some sort of butterfly. What do you think about something like that?
I mean, that's definitely the impression I get. I mean, because I really feel like they're pulling for us. You know, they want us to succeed. And in realizing and understanding a little bit about this, I feel like their technology is so just way above anything we can conceptualize that the fact that there are crashes, I think is absurd. I mean, I think that if there is a crash, there's a crash for a reason, right? They want us to have this.
Right.
Reverse engineers figure it out. And I think that's what that is. I mean, I think when your technology is that high level, a crash is never an accident.
Right. Well, I mean, there's different theories too. There's some people think that there's, you know, there could be, it's like us from the future coming. Like we've had Dr. Michael Masters on, who thinks that it's some sort of time travel thing, like the UFOs are the time travel machine and the gray archetypes are us that have evolved into the future. There's other people that think that it's some sort of like, you know, satellite thing, like it's us but it's not us, and somehow in the past we got off and those people are still hanging around, kind of a thing. There's other people that think maybe it's a von Neumann probes, which self-replicating probes that somebody created in the universe at some point, and they're around, and maybe the civilization that even created them is no longer around, you know. So there's all these different theories, but I think that me personally, I like the idea of like the time travel thing, because I think if science keeps progressing, I think that I don't see why that wouldn't be possible.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've had this discussion with people before. You know, people want to say, oh, this stuff with these crafts is impossible. And my argument to those people is that I think you can do anything you want to do as long as you can figure out physics and how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and time travel included. You know, I don't think that's out of the question either. I think that when you limit things and you put it in a box and you say anything outside this box is impossible, you're just limiting yourself, really. You're constructing your own little prison. I mean, we do that with science, we do that with religion, we do that with our own emotions. You know, and it's time to break out of that
So what I want to do actually is let's wrap this up. Can we do like a half hour on our Patreon for our patrons? That's cool with you if you've got time. Also, let's call this part one because people were saying that your audio was chopping up. So maybe we can have you back on and kind of figure that out. I don't know how bad it is. I'd have to go back after we're done and listen to it. But we were having technical difficulties for an hour even before we went live. So it's obviously something that, you know, some people might say, you know, it's the grays or, you know, it's this or it's that. But I just think that we can figure out a better technical solution. So let's call this part one. We'll have you back on. But let's do another 20, 30 minutes on our Patreon and go from there. But let's everybody go check out his book, Initiated. It is available on Amazon. I have the link down below. And I read it. It's a great book. What is it, about like 360 pages? So it's not super long, but you know, you do get your point across. You do help the reader be immersed into kind of what you're feeling at the time and stuff like that. So I highly recommend it. So yeah, we're going to figure this tech stuff out. We'll have you back on for a part two and we'll get into, I really wanted to talk about the Greek, mythology type stuff too, because I know you threw a lot of that in there and I have a lot to say about that as well. So let's focus on that in part two, maybe, because I think that, the esoteric stuff is vastly important in this topic, but I did want to get your just basis, you know, basic story out there. So let's do that again. Go check out his stuff. And if you're interested, later we'll be putting up this Patreon we're about to do with Matt. So go to patreon.com/mindescapepodcast for just $2 a month. You'll get exclusive content like the episode we're about to do. And yeah, if you want to chat with us, we have, you know, a Discord channel. So go check out our Discord and we appreciate everybody that's on there already. And one more time, head on over to indrasweb.org and sign up for an account. If you like having rational discourse and dialogue on these types of topics, it's the perfect place for you. So go check that out. And listen, man, I really appreciate your time and you sharing your story. And like I said, we'll get you back on here again for part two very shortly and we'll discuss all the esoteric stuff. So
yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate everybody who's listening.
All right. Everybody stay safe out there, and we love you all, and we'll catch you next time. Peace.